I am unashamed. What about you?
All I have is 20s now. My bill phone, no hundreds.
No hundreds?
No hundreds.
Really?
Well, you got to get out. Is that mom? Is it?
So she came by. You got 100. I said, yeah. I said 20.
Well, how does the money get there?
I had several 20s, up to a couple hundred of it, all in the 20s. I don't know. But she just,
I think there's a story
out,
there.
When she doles it out, she don't, bless her, hundreds. And I'm thinking,
well, no, she got them from me. I gave her $1,000. She probably run through that.
Oh, she gave
butter.
It away.
I told you.
10 out of 10. 10 out of 10. Gave every bit of it away.
Yeah.
I said, you give away too much money. She said, what are you going to do when you die? Are you going to need it then? I'm like, trying to get my head wrapped around that thinking.
Well, what I love, though, Des, is so you and mom, your life is so different than everybody else because you're here. You exist and you live, but you never shop for anything. Money just appears in your wallet. Fresh new underwear and T-shirts in your
drawer.
That's
the way it works.
Because you haven't actually.
Well, where does it come from?
Well, that's the point. Dad doesn't know. There's no.
You don't know.
No, I don't
you
even
need to have a meeting.
Just, you know, that's your meal's ready. I mean,
Dad just.
Your
I mean,
bed's
Dad's
ready
walking
for your
through.
Nap. I mean, everything is laid out.
I mean, it's kind of a charmed life, really, I guess, when you think about it.
You go outside, you got people standing there, and they're going to run the equipment. They're going to. I go down there. All right. You get over
well,
there.
Where did they come from?
I don't know. They just
yeah, we need you need a psychiatrist
a
in your life.
Cadre of individuals who just showed up. Yeah.
And then
yesterday I'm going to go over and I see Red's truck, and I walk around and I see his feet sticking out on that building. He said,
wait a minute, was the building on him?
He said, they're not leaving me a lot of room here. But and I said, what are you doing, Red? He said, oh, it's hot water tank's leaking. He said, rats got it. Well, he's up under the trailer, cuts a plug about like that, threw it out there on the ground. I picked it up.
So this is one of your properties that he's working on. But you don't know. Huh. He's just doing it, and he just takes care of things.
And he's fixing to put that little room in right here.
Yeah.
So they said, Miss Kay said, you got 30 days. He'll want her to give him a little money, and she'll say, okay, here's what you got to do. So start on the trailer. That hot water tank over there is leaking.
And he's on, you have him
on the
retainer.
He said, hey, he said, I don't thermostat went out on that air conditioner. He said, I knew it wasn't running. He said, but thermostat's bad. He said, but I got a couple of them in a box up there. He went and got a thermostat. He had it running in 15 minutes. It's air compressor, one of them coils burn up on it. He just.
I'm speechless.
Air compressor's running. I'll give him a $20 bill sometime. If
so what your point is, you used to give him 100, but you looked up and the 100
now you've only
gone.
Got,
now
so
it's
mom's
20s.
Put
sometime
20.
I give him two 20s, but I usually pay him if he's there and it was actually hard work or pretty slick work, he'd get a little cash.
So, but you only need cash for what comes to you because you don't go anywhere
I don't go
to
anywhere.
Spend cash. So
don't
it's,
go anywhere,
if
don't
you
go.
Have a need in the moment. Right? That's kind of how it works.
But you're not sure where the money's coming from.
No.
I'd probably look into that.
Yeah.
He doesn't care, though.
I could get fleeced and end up with nothing, and I would never even know it.
And you know what's disturbing is nothing would probably change.
And nothing would change. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's the
you don't. You're pretty a low maintenance type of guy.
Very low.
You've lived in the same house for 40 years.
The only time I spend a lot of money is like land.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Or equipment. You spend some
money. Land or equipment.
Well, yeah. He got a whole
diesel.
Fortress. I'm not sure that was on the
but
up and
But you start
up.
Riding herd on 1,600 acres and the boys' names and us. And if you're running, you say that real quick. That's
a lot of property.
That's a
you
big
know
what's
crazy is some of that land you got years ago, you bought it for just $200 to $300 an acre.
That's right.
Because nobody thought it was worth anything.
Well, only correct. Because of what you're doing is
it's
only,
a flood. Well, you're
it floods
mean,
for you.
Phil's the only man in probably this area that when he came down here and they said, you know, the reason this
you're
place
living
is
in a
so
flood
cheap,
area.
Yeah, it's because it's in a flood area. And Phil was like, perfect.
That's right. Yeah, let's go.
Yeah,
I was looking at it like I told Dan. I was just sitting over the other day looking. I said, Dan, every time I look out across these woods, I can't believe we own all this.
That's
I
right.
said, he said. He said, I can't believe it either.
Well, my theory. And
he said, you helped me believe in God because, he said, I looked at where you started and what you ended up with. He said, oh, there has to be a God.
Well, and we hunted a lot of the property.
But Red's convinced of it.
We hunted, and nobody wanted it.
Nobody wanted it. So we hunted a lot of the property around here because someone we knew was leasing it, or some of it was public land at one point.
Let's face it. And we roamed around here and hunted, and nobody said a word.
No, but now we own it, which is really interesting. Yeah. And my theory has always been that, and this may or not be true, it's just what I think, that when you were young, you and your siblings, so y'all didn't have anything either.
Poor.
And all the land around you was owned by farmers because you were in a farm area. And so,
all of it posted.
And so you were roaming around trying to hunt, and really just in y'all's case, for sustenance, right?
No,
for
the family. We were roaming around not trying to hunt. We hunted it. Because we thought anything that grows, like fruit, nuts, or animals.
That was a gift from the Almighty, right?
Yeah.
So you didn't care who owned the
land.
You
weren't really worried about
it. If there was something growing or something just walking along in the woods that you could eat, we said, go for it.
Yeah.
That's called rationalization.
Yeah, big time.
It's called poaching now. But anyway, what my theory is that because you did that all your early life, that there was always something in you that wanted land. I think that was put in there.
The sons of the landowners we were poaching on, they all slowly died out. We leave. We're there for a period of time hunting on their land. They would come back and tell their children, that Robinson bunch, they said, you can't catch them. They said, they can run.
They scoundrels.
Said, they jump barbed wire fences like deer. You can't catch them. Well, their sons called me up 40, 50 years later.
Oh, yeah.
And they said, we used to hear stories about,
I hear from them all the time,
about all you Robinson boys.
Right.
They said,
now you're a legend.
Well, they said, we've come up to a conclusion because all the sons of the landowners were in there drinking coffee.
Yep.
They said, we're talking about the old time.
Yep.
And the guy that was talking said, my dad used to come back and say, hey, he liked to catch y'all, and y'all ran. He'd laugh, you know, and said, scared y'all and everything. And that guy said, but I just want to tell you, Rob, said, you know what the situation is? We miss y'all.
Because I mean, it was exciting.
We brought a little excitement, you know, a little poaching.
Well, it's funny, Dad, because a lot of those guys, obviously now.
Plus, they saw where we ended up.
Right.
And they said, good.
A lot of those guys are your age to mine and Jason's
age. Now they were
age.
Proud to try to catch us. Cause,
well, that's right. And, you're famous. So all these people that are working in city government over in that area where you grew up, I spoke at this big conference one time, and it was all the civic people of Louisiana, town councils, mayors.
Yeah. A lot of them ended up.
Well, look, so all that crew from all those little towns around there, you know, where you grew up, they all just rushed at me, you know, to come up to tell me all about stories they remember to you inside and how proud they were of the native sons. I laughed about it because I thought, you know.
We never touched any equipment.
Right.
Like if they had a tractor,
you weren't thieves.
A wrench, a shovel. No, you didn't touch equipment.
Does that belong to somebody else?
You stuck carefully to the harvest of squirrels and fish. But as far as like messing with their stuff, tearing up anything, no. Yeah.
So you remember
Jay's. I think that's why you got forgiveness.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And you remember Jay's dad's didn't give us a lot of rules growing up. But one of the things he stressed a lot was you do not steal from other people.
Yeah,
like
right.
he was big on that.
There was no thefts at all our family structure.
Other
None.
Than their plums and their and
if
their
it
ducks.
Grew on trees, that old woman lined up the road had a couple of peach trees, and Si and I would watch them closer than she did. And when they got ripe, if they started falling and she wouldn't go picking them up, I said, she's wasting them peaches, Si. What do you think? He said, we got to hit it.
Did
we
you do it at night?
We'd go to peaches. No, we'd do it late in eating, and we'd go into the bushes, eat, go back and get another peach. When we got full
so you
of peaches,
just ate your fill.
We were like a coon. I said, we don't want to take more than we need. We didn't get a basket full and take them home.
You weren't selling them.
No,
none of that.
It's what you could eat in the brush, like watermelons, get them to the thicket, thick. break them, eat the heart out of it, and we'd sit there.
And then
they said, "What do you think?" He said, "We can go another one." And we'd go out there, and we knew they'd already harvested them. These were just, they're going to leave them.
Well, look, I want to say this. Remember when we were in Washington duck hunting?
Yep.
And somebody said, they said, "You know, these farmers, they don't care if you go eat them apples under the tree." And everybody looked around, was like, "Are you serious?"
I tell you what I did. The next orchard we got to, I said, pull over.
We all went out there and got under the trees and ate enough apples to where I didn't want another apple.
That guy from Washington State said they leave a tree or two on the edge. They won't.
Yeah.
He said, just for people to visit, passing by.
Just for tourists.
I said, well, pull over. That's smart. Next one.
Yeah.
But I was thinking that when you said that. I said, I bet that old woman knew y'all were eating and probably just thought, well, them boys are hungry. You know, you never know. You always assume that people, you know, are not generous, but she probably knew and just didn't care if y'all ate a few peaches.
I don't know. Depends probably on how old she was.
Well, it could be. So you mentioned Si. So the other day, Si was over the house because now that he and Stone, my son-in-law, are in business together. You know, they're in the grilling.
Are they?
Oh yeah, they got a grill business going with some guy they met.
Well, Jay can grill.
Now he can grill, and then Si, of course, you know, has a whole line of, you know, just
Si can eat
bull, and
He doesn't look like Si looks malnourished, but I'm gonna tell you that man can eat. I've never seen a person that can eat so much.
Well, I talked him into getting a physical therapist down there, helping with his lungs. Long smoking them Winstons, you know, when he was younger.
Yeah.
But so now the physical therapist, he's bringing him back.
Yeah, so he came in yesterday, and Jay said, well, how'd you fit? Because Jay's been trying to kind of, you know, trying to save as much as you can. He's got COPD.
If he does what Jay does, he's not going to be.
No, he can't do that. Oh, okay. So but he's got COPD, which means he can't get better. His lungs are already, I mean, they're degenerating. But you can hold off the slide. So that's the whole thing. But so Philip asked him, he said, so how'd your physical therapy going? He said, They're killing me. And Jay's like, well, no, they're not killing you. That's the whole point. They're keeping you from dying. No, they're killing me. He says, just like when I did PT in the Army, I told him, I ain't getting this. I'm still just winded every time I run. This ain't working. It's a piece of junk. So anyway, so Philip is there. Philip is a guy that Jay's converted. And he told the conversion story.
From the side of the road?
It's from the side of the road. And he now, after all these years, like, what was that, 30 years ago?
Yeah, when I brought my best friend to the Lord, we were going to a Bible study for another guy, and he saw him on the side of the road. He was just like pulled over for whatever reason, and he's like, "Hey, that's my buddy, pull over." And he's like, "Hey, we're going. You want to go? We're gonna play some cards." That's what he said. And he's like, "I'm in." And so he went over there, and when we got in there, I just said, "Here, let me show you something." And I shared Jesus with him, and I mean, he's been a changed man ever since.
So, and he was, for those of you that watch the show, Duck Dynasty, he was McMillan the villain.
Yeah, that was an embellishment on the show.
Yeah, because he really is a friend, but he was a nemesis in your high school years. So that's kind of where that grew out of.
He
was.
He has that personality. Oh, he's actually a really funny guy. He knew impersonation. He's had a weird life. He used to be like a break dancer. And not that that's weird, but it was weird in our culture. You know, I'm former break dancer. You know, I do voices.
What's the break part? What does that mean, break?
Break
part, huh?
Yeah,
you want to explain? Dancer, I got it, but break dancer, like
it was a style of dancing. Remember they get around, spin around the floor. Did you ever see when
it
looked like they were having an epileptic?
They're doing fake push ups and spinning
around.
This is back when they had the big stereos.
Yeah,
so that's
the 80s.
The break part.
Break. Yeah,
but you know what we
used
to do when we first brought Philip to the Lord? Look, we would gather up at somebody's house. I mean, there'd be 20 or 30 of us. And he would call people, and we would do pranks. And we would laugh, because you're supposed to be quiet. And look, the hardest we ever laughed was when he called my wife's dad, who was a traveling preacher and had a mission work. And so he called him, and of course he answered the phone. And, you know, and then he would do some voice that he wouldn't tell us. And he was like, I was at that We Care campaign, and I just got the impression that y'all didn't care. And you know, Missy's dad would try to respond, well, what happened? You know, he's like, you know, I'm sitting in there, and some of your volunteers, you know, they just treated me like a dog. And he's like, well, we're sorry that happened to you. And he's like, well, you ought to be. I mean, you're going around saying you care, and you treated me like you didn't give a care in the world. I'm sitting there thinking about coming to Jesus, but I thought, nope, you just don't care.
Jace, I think y'all were carrying that a little too far there.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. It's as hard as I've ever laughed. Because when you go into a room and you can't laugh, it's like it's does something uncontrollable.
So let's take a quick break. So one of the ways that I'm always trying to look to save a few dollars is, making comparison. The best thing about capitalism is when you have people competing for your business, it keeps the cost down. The worst thing you want is this communist idea, socialist idea that everything's just one controller and they're the monopoly, whoever it is. I mean, then you don't have a lot of options, right? So one of the things that one of the sponsors that we have is a company called Gabby Insurance. And we actually, Lisa and I just recently went on to Gabby and used it because we were looking at some insurance for a condo we're looking into maybe buying. And so it was really great. I mean, it was very easy to do. They do the comparisons for you and save you money because you're looking at they look at all the quotes. You have to track all that stuff down. So we thought it was really good. Basically, they save $825 on average per year per person. So it's a good way to save some money. It saved us some money. I'm glad these guys are doing it. It's totally free to check your rate. There's no obligation. It takes 2 minutes if you go there right now. Gabby, GABI.com/unashamed, GABI.com/unashamed, and save yourself some money. So, Philip, here's the amazing thing. So, Philip is a guy that Jace converts, and then we converted his wife. She was his girlfriend then, but then she became his wife. But now they've been around. I married him, which was usually the way it worked. All these people Jace was converting back then, his old buddies, then I would marry him, and then we would all took part in their discipleship because they would have them over in groups. I mean, those were great days. And they're all like solid Christian people now. With Philip, it's interesting because Philip, because he was a part of our show, a part of Duck Dynasty, he developed a really close friendship with Cy through that process. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had not really known each other before that other than see each other at church. And so he just kind of became Cy's right-hand man. And, of course, they like to play cards. But, Philip does everything for Cy. He's with him on the road. It really gives me a lot of peace because, I mean, we're kind of looking out for Cy because his kids don't live here. And so, I'm always worried about him, because Cy will just do anything. You just never know.
Yeah, that is the one thing about the show. He's actually crazier and older than he appears.
That's right.
I mean, he is a crazy old man.
So Philip looks after him, which is good. So Philip and I talk all the time because I'm always trying to look out for Cy, make sure nobody takes advantage of him, because it would be easy to do. And so Philip, he does everything and takes care of him. So they were telling the story. Philip's telling me the story, or maybe Cy was telling it. And so Philip, he calls Philip at 6:30 in the morning, and he says, the alarm is going off. This crazy alarm is going off. I can't turn it off. And so Philip could hear the beeping. And Cy's like, it's 6:30 on a Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. And Cy is calling Philip. He says, a piece of junk, and he's talking to Philip. So Philip says, well, go to the thing, Cy. I'll walk you through it. So he goes in there and he opens up the alarm. So it's a door alarm. And he says, all right, here's the code. Punch it in. So he punches it in. Still going. It won't work. It's a piece of junk. And Philip's like, Cy, it has to work. Punch it in again. You must hit the wrong number. So this goes back and forth. And finally, Cy's like, you got to get over here. This is driving me crazy. So Philip loads up 6:30 in the morning. He got woke up. He comes in. He walks in the door, and the alarm's not going off. But he can hear it. And Cy says, it's a piece of junk, I'm telling you. And Philip starts looking around. He goes, Cy's alarm clock is going off.
And he thinks it's
the door alarm? It's the door alarm. And Philip, and look, they live like Cy lives on the way out here. So, I mean, he had to drive 20 minutes to get
to
us.
He's putting the man to look after him, putting him in a... Can you imagine?
I laughed so hard. I was kind of embarrassed. And he said, yeah, I should have checked that other piece of junk. He just moves right up. But Cy said he looked around when Philip realized what had happened. Philip didn't even say anything. He just said, I heard a squeal. And I looked around, and all I saw was the taillights of Philip squealing out of my driveway. Because, you know, he woke him up, brought him all the way out there for nothing. And I said, Philip, were you hot? And he said, well, I was for a minute, but
welcome
I can't stay mad.
Welcome to my world. I worked beside him for 10 years at this range.
That's right.
Oh, boy.
So, Jace, there was another event. You missed it. It was a big event that happened at my house. I missed it, too, because I was out of town. But there was the Robertson girl cousin get together.
I hadn't heard about this.
Yeah. So apparently, I didn't know this either. Once a year, all the Robertson girl cousins, because we got a few girl cousins, they yep. get together and they do it with usually Anna is like, Corona.
Start over again.
So they had this big cousin girl get together. So it was really interesting. So I kind of came in at the tail end of it. And, you know, Amy was there, and who all was there? Tracy Lee, which is Si's daughter. Lulu was there, Melissa. It was about six or seven of the girl cousins.
I fed them jambalaya.
Oh, did you? So you knew about it because they
I
came out here.
I cooked them a jambalaya.
They came out and visited. So it was really interesting, and they wanted to meet Phyllis, but Phyllis wasn't able to come because she had to work. But that was kind of the purpose of the gathering. But I thought it was interesting because what they do now, Daz, they sit around. Most of their parents – have passed away, your siblings, because now it's just you and Si left. And so it's interesting. So they basically sit around and tell stories about what it was like to grow up Robertson. And it was really interesting because listening to them talk, it's a totally different experience, which makes sense, from the girl perspective versus mm-hmm. from our perspective, because they don't hunt, you know, they don't play domino. Like all the things we did growing up that was kind of a part of our Robertson male makeup, they see it a lot differently. I mean, it was really interesting just me listening to them talk about their parents and about how they were. And
they were seated around in a table.
And what did y'all talk about when they came?
Well, they were carrying on a conversation, cousins, Robertson cousins. So I said, I got to get out of here. So I go in there. I said, well, I'm going to sleep on it. So I go on in there. They said, is he coming back? No, he's not coming back. So I go in there, and I just woke up because one of the stories they were telling got so much laughter, they literally woke me up.
So they woke –
I thought somebody had broken in the house. But then I thought about it. I cracked the door, and I looked there. They were all in there just kind of cooling off from the outburst of it. It sounded like they were something bad happening. So they really hee-hawed on something.
Do you even know what it was?
I just seized the door back and went back in there.
Oh, that's hilarious. So here's the thing we noticed, Dad. It was interesting. Maybe you can answer this because I'm just curious now. So there's two Robertsons left out of the seven, you and Si.
Yep.
But every Robertson spouse, including Jimmy Frank, had two because that was the only divorce that ever happened was he and his first wife. But they're all still alive.
Yep.
So how do you explain that? What's the five out of seven Robertsons have passed on, but eight out of eight spouses are still alive? That just I found that weird that somebody wouldn't have passed away. Does it mean that just
hard to figure? I don't know.
I don't know. That's a weird thing, Jace. You got
random
numbers, random chat.
I don't think it means anything.
Okay. Well, it struck me as curious. You know.
That, I mean, that is interesting, but. I don't know.
I'll say this. You can't predict the future. I'd say there's a pretty good chance that Si would go before Christine just because of Si having COPD and all that. Although he's a pretty tough old bird, so he may not. But
you
Christine.
I told you, I learned my lesson about Mrs. Grandma. The woman just defies death.
And then Mom, with all her various ailments, I mean, you wouldn't think, but who knows, you know?
Yep.
You know?
Well, I hope the Almighty gives her a little longer on the earth.
Well,
she's a one-woman wrecking crew. I mean, she's
what does that mean?
Bald, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
big
self-imposed
dogs hitting her legs. I mean, it's deep cuts.
Oh, I know.
Stitches.
Willie, tell about
I go in there and I doctor on. I said, she said, you know, you're so good to me. I mean, taking care of my wounds here, you know. And I said, look, you got to remember, I remember you when you were about 14 or 15. I said, so I've been with you the whole time here. I said, I'm just taking care of you.
Well, and
it happens.
I want to compliment you, Dad, because you haven't always been the nurturing type throughout your life. It never came natural to you, but I've noticed in your later years that you are much more, especially concerning mom.
Yeah.
And you take care of her. And yep. like she, because she's had some pretty bad ailments the last couple of years. Yep, she's had a lot of health problems. By the way, all you guys that have been emailing about that and praying for mom, we appreciate it. She's doing great. Her latest wound, she's almost over. She's back up and around doing her thing. So
yeah, we're down to a little bit of a slight amount, not a whole lot, with little Q-tips. Just putting a little peroxide in the wound.
The wound
is just healing slowly, but it was a gash.
Oh, I saw
on her lower leg.
It looked terrible.
Right above her
foot. Did you ever
see
it?
Oh yeah.
Oh, it's bad.
Oh, it was a bad cut.
But she's doing great, so we appreciate the all the prayers on that too. Let's take another break.
You know what scares me, Jace?
No.
$10 trillion. And printed money scares me. I'm looking for a hedge against inflation. I've read that gold can be one of the greatest hedges against inflation, a safe haven investment in times of turmoil. One of our sponsors, Nationwide Coin and Bullion Reserve Copy. I'm sorry. Let me start that over. It's not copied. You know what scares me, Jace?
No. large dogs.
Large dogs and $10 trillion of money that's been printed scares me. I'm always
why does that scare you?
It scares me because I get concerned about inflation.
Oh,
you know?
See, Zach thinks about stuff. He's a great mind.
I don't think about that. Yeah, what's your point?
My point is one of our sponsors offers a hedge against inflation, gold.
Well, that's all you had to say. You didn't have to do the scare and all that. You just said, let's go find some gold. I'm like, I'm in.
You're in at that point?
Well, gold has been here for creation.
True.
And it's always valuable.
It's always valuable.
And when you find it, see, I'm looking for gold also. And when I find it, I think, oh, this is something good.
Well, it's been up 35% in the last 12 months, and they're predicting it to go to $2,000 per ounce by 2021. And
it's almost there.
Wow. Yeah, it's getting pretty close. They keep upping that number. Every time we read these ads, the number keeps going up. But our sponsor, Nationwide Coin and Bullion Reserve, is a trusted source for precious metals with a 4.6 star rating on Trustpilot. Right now, Nationwide Coin and Bullion Reserve has an exceptional offer for all new customers. So while supplies last, our audience can get 1 ounce, that's a $50 Gold Eagle coin, at cost for just $1,700. Weight and purity, that's probably lower than the...
Well, that is.
Yeah.
Well, how do they make money?
I'm just telling you the offer.
Sounds like a good deal.
So maybe that fluctuates based on market. But anyways, go to you can call 1-800-705-7272. That's 1-800-705-7272. And make sure when you call that you mention that you heard about them on our show Unashamed. Nationwide Coin, 800-705-7272.
So, the book of John is where we've been camping out. And I think, Jace, it was you that said, or maybe it was you and Dad, said that in our opinion, our studied opinion, the book of John is one of the best places to go. Number one, just to get into Jesus and see who he is. Is that, how would you characterize it?
When I spoke at the farm animal owners, I think my first line was, whatever you think about Jesus is going to affect how you live, where you go, what you talk about, what kind of personality you have. And I just kind of paused because I've learned through the years that some silence is good when you say something profound. And I recommended to that audience, because I was with a bunch of farmers, it really wasn't a religious setting, but they had a little devotional there. And I talked about that on a previous podcast, but all I did was introduce Jesus because he's the image of the invisible God. Because everyone struggles with believing in something and trusting and making life decisions based on something you can't see. That's what faith is. And being sure, how sure you are of it. So that's why we hang out from Matthew, Mark, Luke, or in this case, John, because you know what God is like, because you literally can visualize, because he was a human. He was a carpenter, mm-hmm. He went through, nobody believed he had any kind of special sauce, who do you think you are? That was a line asked him. But when you look deeper and look at what he says, it truly gives you an image of what God is like through a human existence. His name is Jesus, translated to English. But that's how you get to know God. That is the focal point.
Right. And we've said this before. So there's four gospels. Because a lot of you guys are just, for the first time, really getting into Bible study. And I appreciate all the comments we get about it. There's Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Four different versions of the same story.
Yeah. And I've often said, I've said before, but since we're kind of doing an overall review here, the people who wrote the titles and the division of the Bible, that just people did that. The Holy Spirit through these men wrote the letters.
Right.
So then people came in to organize the Bible and made the little headings, but none of that is inspired.
Right.
And so I think it gives some people an inaccurate depiction of really what it's about. That's why I don't break the Bible down into New Testament, versus the Old Testament. Somebody had that idea and it worked. I look at it more like, okay, the Old Testament, which would be Genesis to Malachi, basically says Jesus is coming to the earth because you set the stage through history, or God did, on why we needed.
And to be precise, the Old Testament was still in force when Jesus showed up.
Correct.
That's right.
During his ministry. That's a lot correct. Of people miss that.
Because you can read in Hebrews, it's like that. They get the word testament from when someone dies, if they read their last will and testament, then there's a shift in how that family line will continue and what you divide his stuff up and that. So that's why I've said I have a different view of it. I view that section of history as Jesus is coming, because that is the thing. He's coming to earth. Then Matthew to John would be section number two, which is Jesus is here, and that's what you see what God is like. And now the one thing they all have in common, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, is that Jesus was perfect. He came from a virgin. He's perfect. He died on a cross as a sinless human. He was buried, and he came back from the dead.
Which all four record. So some have asked me, why repeat yourself from four different angles about the same person? My answer to that every time is, so you can't miss it.
That's why when you read it, you're like, well, why is it the same stuff? Well, it's just four different angles of what Jesus was like when he was here on the earth. So then you have Acts of the Revelation, which I believe basically says he's coming back. Yep. So then the churches get started all, from while he was here. So if you kind of look at it,
Acts 1:11, he leaves supernaturally.
Right. So, generally what I'm saying, the 11th verse of Acts 1 would be that transition, just like we were talking about the Testament earlier about being a transition point. But they're just making that up also. But that way, if you look at it like that, you get the point, which is Jesus. You say, well, why is that the point? Because that's how you... He's the image of the invisible God. So that's what how you know what God is like.
Right. And so each one of the early gospel writers, Matthew was one of the 12. He was the tax collector. And it's interesting because he had a heavy he was Jewish. And so the book of Matthew is much more themed in law and Jewish history, and it's different.
And Jesus's rebuttal.
That's exactly right. So a lot of those texts are going to deal with that.
That's the old woe to you section,
right.
And
John doesn't even deal with that. Matthew did. Mark's got a different take. His was a lot shorter. Mark was younger, and it was interesting. You get a little bit different flavor. Luke was actually a Gentile. He's a physician. He ran around with Paul in that era. Mm-hmm. And then he wrote Luke and Acts. Mm-hmm. Which is really interesting. And he was writing those as a testament to send to Theophilus to show them, hey, this Jesus and this New Testament or this church, and you know, now we know it's New Testament.
He
church.
Said all of them said so much and approached it from all the different angles that four different individuals end up saying the same thing about the same being at the same time.
Right.
And you're saying, how could they have? What? How could it be possible that they invented that story?
Right.
It's too rich in history.
And the reason I bring it up now is because I want our audience who's going through the study of John with us to always know the best way to do this is when we're studying we're in a passage. A lot of it, go and find those other Matthew, what he says, Mark says, Luke says, because you're going to get some flavor around what's going on in a different perspective. It's the same reason why a famous person. Like, say, George Washington. I mean, how many biographies have been written about him? And think about it, because he lived a lot of different aspects of his life. Well, it's the same thing with Jesus. I mean, he had a huge impact in 3 years on the ministry on the earth.
Well, so, but what separates Jesus is he came back from the dead.
Well, obviously.
I'm just saying.
That's the only part, when you get to that, that's the only part that Thomas Jefferson, who I admire for the Declaration of Independence, and his, but he could not go that.
He missed.
Yeah, well,
he couldn't leap.
Phil, nobody, is any leader. They're disqualified when it comes. You know, once they're dead.
Right.
I mean, so now here you got a claim of a person, who number one claims to be God. That's quite a claim. Number two, comes back from the dead. Okay. Well, now we're with you.
Right.
Because whatever you represent, this whatever I'm searching for or feel like I need to find on earth, that's where you need to end up. Because that's really the only ticket off the planet in a real way that's kind of like you were here.
Right. Yep. So let's take another break. So basically, we're all just kind of coming out of COVID with our being able to meet at our church, which has been a blessing. Dad, you guys met recently, which that went well, right?
Yep.
And so did ours. It was really neat. I thought it was emotional, I would say, Jay's, when everybody got back together.
We started singing. I was a little emotional.
I was too. And a lot of people were that, you know, our singers and stuff. So it's been hard, obviously, being apart. But we got a new sponsor for the show, and they have come up with a good product to help keep people connected. It was especially important during COVID, but even going forward. It's called Ajace, A-D-J-A-C.
It has a ring to it,
Ajace. And basically, they have a technology about setting up a database for your church to be able to stay connected. And they make it super easy. It can be up and running in 2 minutes. Portrait, address, phone number, email, all those things can be synchronized. It can also work with Planning Center and some other, you know, worship software as well. It's secure. Nobody can get into it unless they're inside your church and they have access. Get it on your mobile apps. It's also inexpensive. Free for churches under 50, $10 a month for churches between 50 and 250. So they make it affordable for you to be able to do it for your church. So we encourage you to go to Ajace, ADJACE.com. Hit the new church button. You'll be up and running in 2 minutes.
They need to say space to face with a Jace.
Ooh, that's good.
There you go.
You got to charge for that kind of stuff.
So anyway, I say all that to say back to John. So we're in John 7 and about to be into John 8. We want to try to get some of that in today. And I wanted to set it up because it's been a while since we talked about it. But there were the last time we studied this in John chapter 7, these questions that kept coming up, because the whole thing keeps coming back to, is he the Son of God? Is he not the Son of God?
That's why I said that. What you think about Jesus, if you think about that one question, these questions in John are asked over and over and he has a demon. Well, he seems like a good man. If you just zeroed in on the claims.
That's right.
I remember even when we were in school, we had a whole section of just the claims and what people thought. I read somewhere where somebody said they boiled it down to, you believe he's either a liar, a lunatic, or Lord. And that was the three categories, which I kind of like that, because he's it's either crazy you know, and the people, this is so crazy. Either y'all are a bunch of lunatics and so is he, or is this just a big lie?
Yep.
Or is he truly Lord of heaven and earth and the Lord of my life? Right. I mean, those are three, that pretty much sums up your view of Jesus.
And I think that's in the common era now, you see that, but the point is, it was there then too. I mean, they not figure it out. It's like, how does he know so much? He hadn't studied. Isn't he the son of Mary and Joseph? I mean, none of this makes any sense. But they were in the dark on one key component. A lot of these people were very knowledgeable about Old Testament prophecy, and they would go back and quote. They would say, well, you know, no good thing comes from Nazareth. There's no way. But see, they missed it. They didn't know he was born in Bethlehem. They missed that point. See what I'm saying? So they just missed so many different aspects of it.
But even if it was true, he's going to defy all your normal laws anyway.
That's exactly right.
You know, they were, I mean, God's the one who thought it was a big deal to fulfill all the prophecy. Because to me, a lot of times I'm just selfishly confessing here. I'm like, why did he think that was such a big deal? Because once you're raised from the dead, that's all you had to do for me. You didn't have to go through 300 fulfilled prophecies, you know, through history to impress me. Once the resurrection happened, I'm officially impressed.
Yeah, he wanted to make sure the evidence was overwhelming.
Yeah.
Well, how could I fulfill this many prophecies?
And he's perfect. You know why? Because you and I are imperfect. So you're right. He's perfect. So in other words, God can't leave a loophole.
I think I was being tongue in cheek just because I think he did it, if you really ask me, because when he says something, he wants you to believe it. When I say something, it's going to happen. I mean, you write it down. And here's how I worked it out in history. How many fulfilled prophecies are
300 something, yeah.
Yeah, 300 times. You try to pull a prediction off like thousands of years before, say, this is going to happen, and then, oh, it did. And you do that over 300 times. Well, you get the impression when he speaks, you can more than take it to the bank. I don't know, whatever analogy you can put on that.
There's not a big enough one.
A God promise is in stone, that eternal stone. It is, but I think that's why he did it. That's why it says it's impossible for him to lie.
Right. But here's the irony. All that was happening, all those prophecies are being fulfilled, but because it wasn't how they thought it was supposed to be, they were missing it.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again. Because look,
his narrative did not fit their narrative.
That's right.
And it still doesn't today a lot of people.
To this day.
That's right. Yeah. It was just like on the last podcast, and you were talking about you in your mind, you had been led to believe a narrative that if you were an old person and you got coronavirus, you're done.
That's right.
It's over. You forgot that God was still in charge.
I forgot that God could say, you know like what? I think I got a plan for her for another year. I'm like, okay, I was wrong.
Right. You got to remember, Jace, the Pharisees, they were the experts in the law.
Yeah.
And they got this fellow that says, oh, I've come to fulfill it, and then I'm going to live by it. I've come to fulfill it. They're like, you're going to do what? They just couldn't.
Well, that's why they killed him. Because they're like, you're a blasphemer. I mean, who are you to claim? That's why they try to trap him with all these questions. Just how much is in John about they figured out a question? These are smart
men.
It
never entered their mind that the Lord Jesus, along with the Father and the Spirit, wrote the law. They couldn't think that. If he said he's going to fulfill it, nobody else had, but he's going to do that. How could he say such a thing? He could just simply say, I wrote it.
I mean, if he
would say that.
If there was ever a bunch who were sincerely mistaken, this was it. I mean, I think the miracles, I always go to them. You would think you would believe once you saw that, but nope.
So that's what
I figured one would do it for me, but no.
I would think. I mean, I would say, just show it to me. If you take off running across that river out there, I'd say, okay, but forget whatever expert. I thought I was an expert, but if you can do that, you're the expert.
Let's take one last break.
One of the best measures of how corrupt a country is how rich its leaders get while they're in office. They're not so good at passing laws or governing, but they're great at investing.
Imagine if every American could make money off of war.
In 103 days, that position ends up gaining around 103%. So she made, you know, $2 million plus her original two, so $4
million. I signed, co-sponsored a bill and made too much voluminous flare over it that I wouldn't be seated. So I shut up. The threats that fly around are just absolutely insane.
The Blaze Originals team traveled to Washington, D.C., home to one of the most brilliant financial minds in the world, Nancy Pelosi. In our documentary, Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich, we spoke to Reps Matt Gaetz and Chip Roy, George Santos, and the bane of D.C. elites, Unusual Whales, to expose how our elected officials are beating the stock market and, more importantly, what we can do. To watch today, go to congressgetsrich.com and use code RICH to get $30 off an annual subscription to Blaze TV.
So, Dad, I wanted, before we get into, we're going to get into back into the Book of John today, but I want to mention your book again, because you guys have been doing awesome, doing the early orders, pre-orders. The book releases August 4th, but we're trying to get as many copies pre-ordered as possible. A lot of you went to JesusPoliticsBook.com because you got 2,000, the first 2,000 got a signed copy. Well, you guys got all those, which thank you for that. That's awesome. So when I get an opportunity, I want to let you know about it. So BarnesandNoble.com is doing 500 pre-signed. So if you want to pre-order, you go to BarnesandNoble.com, Jesus Politics, which is Dad's latest tome, and a pretty good book. Dad, I might say, you know, might add. I think it's really good follow-up to the first one. So if you want to check that out, barnesandnoble.com. First 500, get a signed copy. When I talked about that in my last sermon I preached, because I talked about that there were two miraculous feedings, one 5,000, one 4,000. And Jesus is trying to tell his disciples, because even they're like, well, you know, he was like, hey, I mean, how many basketballs did you pick? And he's like convincing them. And these people come back up and they're just like, well, we need a sign. How do we know it's you? You got to give us a sign. He had just miraculously produced food on two different occasions to feed thousands of people. And they were like, you know, we're going to need a sign on that because
a large picnic of 5,000. I've said this before. When you're back there in row 40, back in there, and somebody comes by and you got fish and bread, you're just thinking, boy, whoever brought that in, they didn't have trucking then. But
he's just sitting up there.
What do you think it tastes like?
This is some good fish and good bread.
No, I bet it was the best.
The best ever.
Well, yeah, but they couldn't see the truck or the wagon with all that, because that's a lot of people. I've fed up into the hundreds, but I've never gotten into 4,000 or 5,000. But that's a lot of grub.
That's a lot of grub.
Oh, it's fun. When you preached on that, talking about that, it got into a conversation in our house that got funny. Because Missy said, you know, if you were having a death row meal, your last meal, and I think Karina said, well, that's kind of depressing. And Missy's like, yeah, let me change that. If the first meal you were going to eat in heaven, so I thought that was better. She's like, I got to thinking, you know, one of the evidences of God, she's like, the first time I was down at Phil and Kay's and I ate a crawfish pie, I thought, there's got to be a God, because this is the greatest thing to have. These are like almost heavenly components that have been put together.
The perfect crust.
That man cannot create. I mean, they're serving. And she went on a big deal. I was like, I didn't realize you liked that crawfish pie that much. And she said, oh, no, I'm ordering the crawfish pie on the first.
By the way, it was life-changing.
Phyllis and her man, when they came to visit us, Miss Kay, I said, break out the best, Miss Kay, you know, like a crawfish pie.
Yeah.
When they ate that, those two, they said, that touched our lip, we thought, my goodness, what have we found here?
I mean,
they are amazing.
Well, that spawned the conversation. When we started talking about Jesus feeding the 5,000, how did they miss it? And then we started talking about, okay, what would our one meal be? It was real interesting to hear, because I didn't realize this, but Missy had the crawfish pie with a side of Kay's chicken and dumplings, because she couldn't get off that.
They are good.
With a piece of her chocolate pie. But then this I thought was funny. And then she said, and a side of my twice baked potatoes. Which I was like, oh, you went on your own on that one. Because everybody makes those twice baked potatoes, but she's like, mine's the best.
They are. She's right. Whoever originates is typically always the best. But you're right. That is interesting that she added her own.
Well, she was giving credit to everybody. I thought it was going to be a collection of milk. And then she said, you remember Gloria Jenkins, who's going to be with the Lord now. Yep. We know her sons really well. They love the Lord. And she said she brought up her homemade rolls. And, I mean, I'm like, when's the last time you had one of them? She's like, oh, it's been 20 years, but I never forgot. And I was like, she had assembled this meal and was more giving the credit to the ingredients to God, which I thought was interesting. Of course, then we all went around and named our, like, five-course meal.
You know, it is pretty interesting that a lot written in the Bible, you would an overabundance. A lot of text in and around food.
Yeah.
I think so.
Not said about food.
Well, and I think Jesus interacted in that. I mean, he went to parties. You know, his first one was changing the water to wine. But he was giving you the image. I thought your point Sunday about when Jesus making that from the earthly to the heavenly. And I forgot how you said that.
To look through a spiritual lens instead of just a physical.
When he said, eat my flesh, because most people, I think you made the line, you said, as soon as people read that, they're like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, wait, whoa, whoa.
Whoa, wait, you had me.
Eat my flesh, drink my blood.
But what was the point you made Sunday about
so
that?
So I made the point that all he was doing was making the transition that that's how we maintain what he did for us going forward. See, he already had in mind the Lord's Supper, the things he
basically was saying, don't forget.
That's right. What he was saying was, is this sustenance is going to go on for you until I come back. And so that's what he meant by it. But if you were only thinking the physical, which is what they were, the fish and the bread, that's
but
how
he was
you
making that application.
I tell you what you would do. A lot of them did. They left him right there.
And that's where we're going to hit that next week in the sermon, because you're right. All of a sudden it's like, I'm out. Because if it's just about some weird, like, because that just sounds gross to me. There's no, but they did, they missed
the
his
rumor
whole point.
Went around that they were cannibals.
Yeah.
You know. But don't you think he said that? Because food is one of the things you have to have.
Right. So, and drink, because he said, you'll never be hungry and you'll never be thirsty. Well, you know, he wasn't talking, we all so get
he,
hungry.
He
and
was like, that's my role.
That's
in
me.
In your spiritual life.
Exactly.
Because, like I told you about.
By the way, on that, you would think. All we have is Acts 20, verse 7. Upon the first day of the week, we came together to break bread. Mm-hmm. And then you got the Corinthian letter, you know, about as often as you, when you come together, don't forget this. But why is it that we do that every week? And
you know,
a lot of people don't. I mean, it just seemed like the weight of what's being recognized there, the body of Jesus nailed to a cross, his blood that was shed, and you participate in that. It's symbolic, granted.
I think as long as you don't make it a rule on either side, I'm fine with it. I don't like people to say you have to do it every week, and I do it every week.
Yeah.
But if you say, well, you have to, well, you're being silly.
Well, the reason why is because I fully believe when they were first meeting daily, they were taking the Lord's Supper more than just once a week.
They sure were.
So they were taking it on multiple occasions. So to try to, you know, we just decided.
They would just stop during a meal and say, let's remember Jesus here. And they do that.
I would
support.
That's
pretty cool, right there.
Yeah. If somebody feels like they need to do it every 5 minutes to get closer to God, you know what? Carry around a little. You know, we carry around the little Germa, whatever.
Germex.
I'm like, have you a little
cracker and some juice?
Cracker and some juice in your purse for special occasions, especially when you go to that party that you probably shouldn't have gone. Say, hang on a second.
Apostle Paul said, as oft as you do this. Yeah. You are proclaiming the Lord's death until he comes.
That's the point. Jace is right. You don't want to get in the rules of how often. You want to get into the meaning behind why should we keep doing it. Because basically he said in that text, this is the expression going forward until I come back.
Yeah.
So this is going to be the reminder. You're in me. You're eating of this. And I made the point in the sermon that he was definitely talking about his flesh, because if he hadn't come here in flesh, we wouldn't be saved. Mm-hmm. God had to come in flesh.
And by the way, in all these countries like China, where we have brothers, and North Korea and Iran and Russia and all that, you have the sons and daughters of God. You can bet your bottom dollar that they're not doing it in public. But somewhere among that, in their little houses, their little meetings together, they're still remembering Jesus, their Lord.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
They have that. Well, you just think how much more that would be worth if you were, if it was against the law of some country to meet two or three of you, 200 or 300 of you. Mm-hmm. You say, church building, that's out. And most of those countries, you said, no, they know where you are then.
Which, by the way, and we got to go, but the what you just said was one of the interesting things about our live stream, which I think has been great, is that I love it that families, they're listening to a sermon, and then they're having discussion.
Oh, they take it, and they take the Lord's Supper together, and then it you talk about meals, and even like Missy making that transition from a death row. We then started talking about, we were all sinfully locked up, but he freed us, and we need to be on the positive side of that,
right.
You know? And like I say, about when we get these petty arguments about how much should you take the Lord's Supper, you never want to be on the side of something where you're defending thinking about Jesus less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, well, this is how many times you do it. Well, what if I do it twice that much? Nope. Well, you just said you're supporting not thinking about Jesus. All right, I'm out. Go do your legalistic deal, and I'll let me know how that works out.
So if any of you are interested in checking out what I said beyond that, you can go to wfrchurch.org, and all our old sermons are on there. It was from the 28th was the date on that sermon. So if you want to see what I said, you can check that out. See you next time. So we're so glad you guys were with us today. You can subscribe on iTunes or Spotify or YouTube or Facebook, and be sure and rate us on iTunes so that other people can know about the podcast.